Welcome to the February edition of BBRO Bcast. I'm Francesca Broom, your host and Knowledge Exchange Manager for BBRO. Like many of you, the BBRO field team have been prepping for the new season, ensuring our drill is ready for action and that sites have been cleared and sprayed of spoil heaps and unwanted green matter. Whilst on-farm hygiene has always been important, for 2025 it is crucial. We meet with Professor Mark Stevens, who will explain more.
Mark, welcome back to Bcast. And although we might now be into the February edition, it seems that we are continually asking you questions about neonics and the future of this year and what's going on. But the recent news from DEFRA regarding our future use of the pelleting option has actually raised so many different questions for us. So first of all, what do you personally think of the decision of DEFRA?
So, morning, Ches. Good morning, everybody. It's always a pleasure to be able to bring you right up to speed with the latest. And yes, on the 23rd of January, we received the notification from DEFRA that the use of Cruiser SB on the 2025 crop wasn't going to be permitted, in that it hadn't met all the criteria of the assessments for the emergency authorization. And as a consequence of that, the application was rejected. I think at this point, what's really, really important is about thinking what we can do with the tools and technologies and information that we have to make sure that everyone in the industry is able to manage and control the aphids that may ultimately impact the crop with virus yellows.
So, Mark, you mentioned there that we didn't meet all of the criteria. Do you know what we actually missed on?
So there are five criteria associated with emergency authorization, and we passed four of the five. The one that caused the challenge is with around the environment, the impact on bees and water. And so, you know, new assessments are made and new positions are taken, although clearly we know what's happened previously in previous years and how that journey has gone. So I see it very much at this stage is the decision has been taken. We've got to use the tools at our disposal to make sure that we keep the crop as healthy and keep aphids and virus out through 2025. With that in mind, and let's just reflect what's going to happen over the coming weeks and months, we are in that critical period of keeping a very, very close eye on the weather, like we all do anyway, because at the beginning of March, we will have the virus yellows forecast. And that will give us the first indication of the threat that the crop will be under for this coming season. Now, what is fascinating, and for all the weather buffs amongst you, many of you will have appreciated that January on the whole has been pretty cold. For some, it's been the coldest for 15 years, and for many, probably the coldest since 2021. And 2021 was an interesting year in relation to neonicotinoids and Cruiser SB, because that was the first year of the emergency authorizations that the industry submitted, but we didn't trigger it because we had the beast from the east. So what is fascinating is I think from what I've been looking at, and, you know, I can only look at certain weather stations and whatever, the mean temperature up until time of recording is around about 3 degrees for East Anglia, maybe slightly colder into the Newark area. I don't anticipate Mysis persici coming into the crop until May at the earliest. That is very, very different to what happened in 2020 and even last year when the first aphids were coming in late March, just as the crop was coming through the ground.
Mark, the impact of that, I'm assuming that the cold weather in January just kills the population that's out there or just stalls it? Because if it's stalled, surely a warm period in February will restart it. But at what temperature do we actually destroy the population?
So there's some good questions in there, and it's not straightforward on certain, you know, it's X temperature. So what do we know? Cool temperature suppresses aphid activity and multiplication. But we also know from previous work that you need temperatures down to -7 to really have a fundamental impact on mortality and aphid death. What is really positive this year is in that cold spell we had in the second, third week in January, we had temperatures down to -9. Probably some people had it even lower than that. And most people also didn't have an insulating blanket of snow. So aphids would have been directly exposed to those really cold temperatures. And that will have had an impact and will have helped tremendously in reducing aphid populations. We are now in the middle of the key 2 months for the forecast. And what I can't predict, although it will become clear as we go through February, is what is going to happen in the next 4 weeks. Because in this new world we live in with climate volatility and climate change, and if it goes very warm, and I can remember when the end of January has gone to 20 degrees and it feels like summer, that will have an upward pressure on the overall mean temperature for January and February and potentially have a consequence in elevating the level of the forecast. But as we go through February and as we start to get actual temperatures rather than a forecast, we start to get a better idea. It becomes clearer and clearer each day we go through February exactly where we're going to be with the threat.
If the temperatures stay relatively low until the end of February, there is nothing to say that we won't have a population growth in late May, early June.
Speculation we've got to be very careful with, but there are some pointers we can learn from previous years. As I said, if the aphids come in later, and I think that will be the case, what that enables, as long as we can get the crop in the ground, if weather allows us in the traditional window of March and early April, I'm hoping in 2025 the crop is probably at a 6 true leaf stage or even greater when the first aphids starts coming in. And that is very different to a season where the first aphids come in when they're just poking their way through the ground or at cotyledon's first true leaf, because that's when they're most vulnerable, are most susceptible to virus infection. And what you also know is then you're going to actually have the crop going at its most vulnerable through the main migration period. If the aphids don't come until May, then we're going to be getting to mature plant resistance much quicker. And that also helps in the sort of classical approach to controlling aphids to minimise the impact. I don't have a crystal ball in the BBRO. There are times I wish I did. But all the pointers that we know, and using my 36 years of experience of working in sugar beet, I think I've roughly got an idea when things are going to happen. And it's not going to be as early as we've seen in 2023 and 2024. And then also what we don't know, as we saw in 2024, it's a forecast of what's going to happen at the end of August. But if you then have weather events through April, May and June, like we did from last year, even if the forecast was high, you can't predict whether heavy rain events are going to suppress the populations. And that's exactly what we experienced last year, because we were anticipating high levels. But actually, continuous heavy rain is a very good aphid suppressor. So there's also other factors we need to appreciate through the season.
So fingers crossed that the cold weather continues. But with the emergency authorization, you know, no longer available to us, or certainly not for this year, what are we actually looking for 2025? What are the steps that growers need to be taking? Because they still need to monitor the crop very closely. And you know, what are the options going to be for them?
So absolute critical question at the moment, Chaz. And what we really need to be thinking is, what can we do today or in the coming weeks to make sure we minimise risk? Just forgetting the weather impact on aphid population. So the key message at the moment within BBRO is hygiene. Anything that we can do on farm right now to reduce the aphid population and particularly the virus sources will help suppress the impact of virus yellows as we go through 2025. Aphids overwinter on weeds, they overwinter on brassica crops, and hopefully that cold weather has helped reduce that. But also they can overwinter or then go into clamps or any root remnants or spoilage heaps, clean a load of dumps or anything like that. So I would encourage you all to appreciate those sources and risks and make sure you destroy and remove as soon as possible, preferably 6 weeks before drilling the crop. And I would also ask just to reflect, because we're doing a lot of work within the BBRO at the moment to appreciate, particularly in cover crop mixes, what are hosts of virus and aphids. You've used green cover crops through SFI initiatives or anything else on the farm, even if it's game cover strips. Some of those species will host the aphids. Some of those species will host the virus or viruses, because there are potentially three viruses, as we know, or they host both. And what we need to do is make sure, given that we don't have a seed treatment, that they need taking out as a matter of priority, as a critical step within your journey to protect the crop into 2025.
We've got a lovely document that's been produced by Georgina Barrett on cover crops. And although this is from the first stage of our work, we will be building on that. I know there's a lot of information there that growers should look at. So it's available on our website, but also we've got copies that we've handed out at our Beet Tech events, which commence next week. So just looking forward, Mark, we've obviously, mm-hmm. you know, this year we've got our own ideas of how we can mitigate the problems this year. Hopefully weather is going to have a huge impact on the levels of potential virus. But what about the projects we're doing to address things in future? I know there's been quite a lot of talk about the gene editing programme, but I think we're a long, long way off seeing any outcome from that, aren't we?
Yeah, gene editing is really exciting, and it's great to see how government is starting to embrace that with the new bills that are coming through. But it is a journey. The good news is that the industry is undertaking research in gene editing, specifically for virus yellows. And we do have the Innovate UK project led by British Sugar and involving various other partners, including John Innes and Tropic, as well as BBRO. But like any plant breeding initiative, even though gene editing hopefully gives us new opportunities to tackle the problem and also hopefully speed up the process, you know, it always takes time. But it will hopefully ultimately become an approach that we'll be able to adopt. And clearly, given what we know about the solutions and the challenges of the use of neonicotinoids, all the breeders are working heavily on finding solutions. And it's really encouraging to see the progress they're making at a very difficult target, because as I said, you've got three viruses, and hence we see some really encouraging data through the Goliath trials and also company specific. So we're on a journey like we've seen with other problems in the past, like Rhizomania and Beet Cyst nematode. You know, you will start to see an improvement in future genetics against virus yellows. And I think the critical thing that hopefully we see is that the yield drag in the absence of the problem starts to disappear. So it becomes an integral part of all varieties as we go into the future. And that's really exciting. Can't say too much at this stage, but it's something we need to keep a very close eye on. And also, when you think about that, you know, the sugar beet industry is very good at adopting technology to solve a problem. Genetics is often the mainstay alongside some of the other, you know, chemical strategies. But all the other work that we're doing alongside the use of undersown grasses, or whether we introduce endophytes or we use colours or the beneficial strips, all form part of that. But most of those are still in that research to commercialisation. So we have to think about how we're going to adopt those and also make sure they are fully approved if it needs to go through an approval process. So we're on that journey. But things like undersown barley, for example, which we know reduces the attractiveness of the crop, many growers, or some growers, I should say, will use it anyway for wind blow to stabilise soil into the spring of 2025. If we think the aphids are going to be early, as they were in 2020, there are clear benefits of using that strategy. But as I said, you may just need to be reflective on the season and get a better idea on aphid population and arrival dates before you probably jump into that. But it is one strategy that could be easily adopted and is elsewhere in Europe if we need to go early. But that may not be the case given the weather we've been having.
A caveat to add with that, I mean, I don't think, like you, it's probably not something to be used for this year. But we have to make sure that if you are going to use something like an undersown barley, that you do actually spray it off once the crop is established.
Yeah, and that's a critical message associated with it. It works, but don't let it outcompete the sugar beet, because the impact of the barley competition will be greater than the impact of virus later in the season.
You've mentioned there the undersown barley, you've mentioned endophytes and the dyes, all of work, which we have seen some kind of impact. But we've also got an odour treatment that we've been trying. How's the outcome of that?
So we're keeping very close eye on what's going on in France. That's AgriOdor, which is a repellent product. And we've seen some encouraging data. We have an experimental permit to look at it under UK. We're hoping to do further work in 2025. And we're also keeping a very close eye on data from France, because they've done more work than we have. And that may be, under the right circumstance, another approach within that greater IPM strategy to stop aphids and virus that we'll adopt. It won't be commercially available for 2025. We'll keep you updated. And as I said, it is exciting because it does provide another strand of the strategy. But if we're just thinking about the season coming, then that is something we won't be able to use. What will happen in 2025 is clearly our advanced monitoring, so the yellow water pans, in addition to on-farm monitoring up to 50 sites, that will happen. And we will be keeping a very close eye on the first aphids that are coming into the crop. And as ever, the BBRI website will have real-time data and updates to give you guidance of where the aphids are and what's happening. And at this point, the whole crop will be unprotected from aphid control. So what we will then need to think about are sprays and treatments that can be applied that will hopefully then have an impact on aphid population. So if we just think about what is available for 2025, currently there are two active ingredients. There's acetamiprid, which is Insist, and then is flunicamid, and you can either get that as Topiki or Afinto. But the active ingredients can only be applied once, so you've got two sprays. So as we go through February, we're in the process of submitting a further emergency authorization for an additional spray of Insist, which will then give three sprays for the 2025 crop. And if we have two sprays of Insist and one spray of a flunicamid-based product, then clearly the actual spray program will need to be Insist, flunicamid products, Insist, to make sure we try and manage resistance, because you're then alternating products that we have available. So the spray threshold will be one green wingless aphid per four plants up until the 12 leaf stage, then it goes to one per plant up until the 16 true leaf stage, and then there's no economic benefit from spraying post that position. What hopefully means, going back to what I said right at the beginning, if the aphids aren't coming in until May, fingers crossed, then the crop has got more canopy. And what I will hope would happen in the next season is, if you've got more canopy, you've got more target, you've got more area for the spray to land on, and hopefully it will gain greater efficacy and give you protection for somewhere between 14 and 21 days.
So it's about watching the weather data and hoping for that cold spell to continue. Although we don't want it too cold over the next couple of weeks, because we're all going to be rather busy and out on the road with the two Beet Tech events and drill training. And a lot of what you've covered today is actually going to be part of the Beet Tech conference as well, isn't it, Mark?
Yes, so clearly, you know, using the Beetcast as an opportunity to get this message out. But we will be in Norwich on the 4th of February, and then again the 11th of February in Newark. And we will have, we'll be doing things slightly different, but there'll be a breakout session that I'll be leading on aphid and virus control. Looking forward to seeing many of you there, where we'll pick up the attention to detail. And that's something we're going to have to get more used to as we go forward on this journey.
And attention to detail is exactly what Beet Tech 25 is all about, with sessions on virus, cover crops, nitrogen use, weed control and much, much more. We'll also be running drill operator training in the afternoon, so please do make sure you book a place, and that's at www.bbro.co.uk/events. We will also be releasing videos of some of the sessions in late February, and all of the events will be carrying basis and Neroso points. But unfortunately, we haven't received basis points for this month's Speak Tech, so watch out for the copy in March for a double whammy. And that just leaves me to say, we hope to see you very soon, and thank you very much for listening.